This is episode 142 of the A-News podcast, which covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week on Anarchist News. It's designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism by email at podcast@anarchistnews.org. For more information and usually some good commentary, see you at your favorite, aka the only, non-sectarian, comment-friendly anarchist site, anarchistnews.org. What's new this week? Responsibility claim for attack against DIAS forces and the riot police van in Exarchia. From anarchists worldwide. Both a communique about an action and an alert about some of the responses to that action and some fun deterring of state metaphors. Quote, police showed its real face once again when a few militants with homemade means of struggle attacked the fully armed guards of the order, managing to ruck the contrived omnipotence sense in this area. Managing also to remind that the surgical operations of M. Chrysocoides' police are carried out with no anesthetic when they have to cope with the resistance which shames repression and measures its limits. And finally, reminding that, without combative reflexes and intensification of the social class resistances, it is sure that these repressive operations will achieve to numb and paralyze the movement, which will get used to the repression incorporating fear and relinquishment. Unquote. Good luck to us all in our endeavors, including getting some of these things translated. Also, commenter class warrior belies the boring username with some decent turns of phrase. Subvert the expectation.
The Swift Rise and Fall of Japanese Anarchism, from japantimes.co. A sexist and extremely partial thumbnail of anarchist history in Japan, leaving out some of our favorites but offering a take that is not too unfriendly. The only actual anarchist it pays much attention to is Bakunin-influenced Sakai Asugi. Quote, bohemian? Anarchic. Married to one woman, he had very public affairs with two others, declaring he loved all three equally. One of his lovers, consumed with jealousy, stabbed him in the throat. Perhaps Kropotkin's benign cooperation is wishful thinking after all. Unquote. Mainstream media does tend to equal condescending to anarchists, as we know. It ends with a couple paragraphs about the international situation and how the great Kanto earthquake of September 1st, 1923 was a cover for the state to take out known activists. Nothing like that would happen today, of course.
New Democracy, the New Face of State Violence in Greece, from CrimeThink. A revisit of an Athenian anarchist who discusses what has changed since August 2019, the increasing power of the right wing, the tactics and apparent goals of the state, including concentration camps for immigrants, called inland accommodations, etc. Quote, the people who have been kidnapped from these squats by the state were transferred to detention centers or taken to concentration camps far from the public eye. Many people have been turned away from these camps due to overcrowding, leaving them homeless and vulnerable to human trafficking and attacks from fascists and police. The housing inside these camps is reportedly little better. Many stories have gone unheard. Communication has been lost with many of those taken. Some of those evicted from Clandestina refused to board a bus to one of these camps. The police stole their papers and forced them to walk back 10 miles in the pouring rain without knowing where they would go. It is becoming common for police to steal the documents of refugees or immigrants who resist, which complicates future police encounters. Conditions in the camps are overcrowded and unhygienic. Fascist groups have pelted refugees and immigrants with rocks and organized pork barbecues outside the camps in hopes of offending those they assume to be Muslims. This week, the government released a plan to further curtail procedures that welcome refugees while funding new concentration camps in abandoned schools or unused land far from cities and tourist destinations, unquote. That quote is only the beginning of a litany of terrible news. Unlike most crime think pieces, this one does not end on an upbeat. We can do it, note. So I believe it. I wish that were just me.
Stand against Amazon and gentrification. An unofficial report back and analysis from Puget Sound Anarchists. A first-person account of an action against Amazon, which seems to be rightfully the boogeyman of capitalism at the moment, especially in the stressed-out gift-giving season. Quote, it was surreal, or rather all too real, feeling watching rich people walk by and workers go about landscaping as we shouted into the urban desert at the towers and orbs of avarice. It was a mix of feeling weak and powerful all at once. It was a mix of feeling alienated and together. At times I felt alone in the crowd and my stomach sank, but at others the petty acts of disruption or genuine moments of engagement with each other or passersby were a joy. Eventually, that security guard locked the doors as the cops moved in, which may have been a prelude to arrests. Feeling like evading the police rather than clashing with them, we took off. Unquote. The relevance of this story is the emotional component of it, as it again raises the interminable question of what makes a good action. Is it a consciousness-raising exercise? Is it empty posturing? Is it to locate allies? Is it an opportunity for the state to target us and learn from our mistakes? Obviously, it's all of those things and more, so your mileage may vary, as always.
Chile, freedom for the prisoners of the revolt. From Anarchists Worldwide. Brief update on current repression in Chile and a bit of information about a professor who's been arrested for a fairly minor offense and put into high-security prison. Quote, now we are witnessing the beginning of a selective repression targeted against the civilian population, people that the state, that is, the ruling class, considers its most fearsome enemies, women against patriarchal violence, defenders of nature, student centers, neighborhood councils, unions of combative workers, teachers, etc. Faced with a generalized and uncontrolled revolt and the prospect of a possible social revolution, the frightened bourgeoisie will not hesitate to ruin the lives of people who have dared to break with the suicidal passivity that characterizes the normal of this system. Unquote. Tired jargon, but of course even more tired of the fucking repression. Also, gotta love Anon telling other people to go bust down prisons. Yes, dear.
Anarchist Union of Iran and Afghanistan calls for arms for those rising up in Iran. From AMW English, quote, the Anarchist Union of Iran and Afghanistan is prepared to declare that it will cooperate with all Kurdish, Arab, and Baloch armed opposition forces. With respect to the widespread repression of defenseless people in Iran, we must be able to provide them with the right tools to defend themselves before there are more dead and the people's movement has been permanently suppressed. Therefore, the need to form an armed revolutionary front to support and defend the people against the Islamic regime's executioners is urgent and necessary. If it is possible to transport weapons to people inside Iran, you should not hesitate for a moment to prevent more people from being bled and buried. The duty of the revolutionary and radical opposition outside of Iran is to provide logistical and strategic support to the struggles and resistance of the people inside Iran. Unquote. Also a list of tactics, like the state using ambulances to move armed forces around. Learn from this, everyone.
Militant demonstration in Mexico City from AMW English. Quote, thousands of women took to the street of the capital for the protest marking the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women, the latest in a series of large militant marches against femicide and rape in Mexico. Masked demonstrators with sledgehammers shattered the glass panes of bus stops and advertising billboards, tore down barricades, lit a bonfire, and painted messages such as, how many more need to die, on monuments lining Paseo de la Reforma, the city's most famous street. There were also many Circle A symbols painted by anarchists on monuments. Mexico has the most femicides of any country in Latin America. More than 9 women are murdered there every day. 2 in 3 Mexican women say they have been victims of violence in some form. Recent demonstrations in Mexico City targeted police stations after multiple rapes of young women by cops. Unquote.
Greece, anarchists defiant amid eviction threat to occupied social centers. From Freedom News UK. This is a note on the state of affairs in Exarchia, mostly consisting of a rebellious passage from one of the squats. Quote, the crime we have committed is that we envision and build a reality beyond economic bargaining, believing that housing, water, and energy are basic needs, and therefore should not be considered products where prices will be driven by profit, supply, and demand laws. And this, for capitalism, is something unforgivable. On the other hand, we see politicians and all high-ranking officials accused and convicted of financial scandals and corruption, but enjoying a special immunity and privilege. To whoever is blinded to this reality, we have to say that the repression currently underway by the competing movement is simply to lay out the red carpet for extreme neoliberal policies that are coming. Unquote.
Anarchist Black Cross Moscow is quitting support for Arman Tsagenbaev. From avtonomen.org. Ugh. A political prisoner of the network case is abusive to women, not just outside, but inside prison as well. Quote, several women have spoken up with their stories of violence and abuse perpetrated by Arman Tsagenbaev. We have no reason not to believe them. Armin has always had a questionable reputation. As an example, long before the arrests, Viktor Filenkov and Igor Shishkin stopped their communication with him. Some of the other defendants were barely familiar with him. Many of us didn't know the details because not all the stories, which are rather personal, were known more widely. We didn't expect him to continue to be dangerous for women while in jail, and that's why we didn't give enough attention to the details. Now we recognize and understand that this was a mistake. The stories shared by these women have left no space for doubts. That's why the collective Repression must announce that we stop any personal support to Armand from our side. We will not collect any money for him, and we will not send postcards or letters. Unquote. Sad.
Anarchist women demonstrate outside Bakirkoi Women's Prison. From Anarchists Worldwide. Very brief announcement. Quote, the organization Anarchist Kadınlar, Anarchist Women, carried out an action outside the Bakirkoi Closed Women's Prison. They stated that all institutions that protect masculinity should be closed down and that prisons should be shut down, not women. The anarchist women chanted slogans in front of the prison and released black and purple balloons over the prison wall to announce their presence and to show support to the women held hostage on the other side of the wall by the patriarchal state. The anarchist women stated that even in prison, the most concrete of places where the male-dominated system holds women captive, women cannot be silenced. The action ended after a statement was read out. Unquote. Cool.
Public statement from fugitive anarchist comrade Dimitris Chatsivislidis. From Anarchists Worldwide. An explanation of events by someone who is now underground on the arrest of two other people and the harassment of his partner, among other things, emphasizing mostly the specious nature of the state's rationalizations. For example, the organization he's accused of being a member of no longer exists, etc. Quote, the repression mechanisms, aware of the difficulty entailed in finding evidence for participation in an armed resistance organization that remains inactive and without any event to suggest that preparatory actions were taking place, are attempting to create scenarios of planned future attacks, but their efforts are tenuous to such a degree that they must resort to the most ridiculous propaganda to create a climate. They reached the point of supplying the journalist mouthpieces with the information that the last time I signed on at the local police station, I was aggressive and I threatened the police officers. This is how armed attacks are prepared. A supposed member of a clandestine political organization during the preparation of an armed attack addresses a personal warning. Who is convinced by such an incredible narrative? Unquote. People who are convinced who want to be convinced, per usual. This is worth reading in its entirety as lessons to learn from, I think.
Statement by anarchist refugee Abtin Parsa. From Act for Freedom. Another much shorter first-person account of harassment and repression in Greece. Quote, I am an anarchist political refugee who has been imprisoned and tortured for 1 year and a half in the secret prison of IRGC in Iran. I was arrested at the age of 16 in 2014 in Zargon City in Iran, accused of insulting the religion and the activity against the Iranian regime. In 2016, I escaped from Iran to Greece. I was in the concentration camp of Samos for 8 months, and during this period, I got the political asylum from the Greek state. In 2017, I arrived in Athens, and since 2017, I am active in the local anarchist movement. The regime is trying to terrorize the movement, but the regime should know that for those who have nothing left to lose, fear does not exist. The resistance will survive and the system will die because our will for freedom is stronger than its weapons and its cops. Unquote.
On the Anarchist Society, from mainstream source Medium.com, aka the next step on from posting to Facebook. This is a quite short piece against hyphenated anarchisms, and maybe against anarchism in general, depending on the emphasis one puts on ism. It's brief enough that it's easy to agree with it, but I think Wayne has a point in the comments, even if he also jumps in front of a bullet that might be better examined from a more neutral position. At any rate, there is a tremendous amount of weight put on the word voluntary here, which might be the weakest part of it. Quote, if anarchists wish to be true to their name, we would realize that we don't individually have the answers. We would realize that our blueprints are nothing but utopian fantasies. We would realize that anarcho-anything isn't anarchist at all. To be truly anarchist would be to be aware of your own desires while realizing that you are probably going to have to work alongside people who might not share those exact same desires. Anarchy must be a voluntary system for all, and all people will never share the same ideas as to what is to be done. Unquote. Perhaps the conundrum is about anarchy as a behavior versus anarchy as a goal.
Anarchist comrades report on November uprising and complete disarmament of riot police in Iran. From AMW English. Very brief notes on violence against protesters and police in three areas in Iran. More hopeful than one might think, at least in parts. Quote, just two nights ago, all the people in Gaxaran attacked oppressive forces. We have two dead and many injured, but the riot police and guards suffered the brunt of the violence. We crushed them. A group of 27 or 28 police were stripped next to the Lebanese neighborhood after they passed near the people. Several Kalashnikovs, a riot gun, a bandolier of seven gas canisters, and batons fell into the hands of the people. A similar situation has not occurred in Gaxaran, even during the 79 Iranian Revolution. The children of the 2000s are fighting. Unquote. Indeed.
Welcome to another Frost Against 2020 festival from oftenomen.org. Quote, the festival is held in cooperation with various grassroots, horizontal initiatives, libertarian, left-wing, and anarchist communities. Active participants are representatives of trans, queer, LGBT communities, feminist initiatives, including intersectional feminism, cyberfem, left-fem, decolonialist feminism, anarcho-communities, including post-anarchists and eco-anarchists, independent media, human rights organizations, and representatives of NGOs. Also participating, environmentalists, philosophers, practitioners, and theorists of contemporary art, developing participatory projects, political activists, and representatives of alternative self-organized associations, unquote. It'd be great to hear back from participants in this festival. More of these get-togethers might consider publishing the presentations and conversations at them. Sigh.
The Future of Return Fire. An extended introduction to this project that has been around since 2013 and what they intend to do in the future. These folks are ambitious as hell and so far have given us dense publications, including one that included the popular Caught in the Net editorial on tech and relations that's almost a magazine in itself. While I disagree with their point about footnotes, I firmly stand with them on their negotiation with and rejection of academic standards, and they seem capable of respectful disagreement, unlike so many other individuals and projects today. So kudos to them. Quote, we've hosted new articles on personality disorder diagnosis here in the UK, anarchist practices of attack as they actually play out in our daily lives, smart city infrastructure and philosophy as it arrives in an English city, moments of conflict during previous generations on these isles, the industrial degradation of everything we know and love, poetry as a means to continue our visionary anarchic path, and more. We've brought out translations from territories in struggle, as well as those languishing in capitalist normality, on the friends and enemies that comrades meet in our paths, and those reflecting on the macro processes of state building and state avoidance, as well as on the many moldings and separations that we experience in the world today at the most intimate level. Unquote. This intro is heavily hyperlinked with previous content from them, and they have a lot of stuff on the Anarchist Library as well for those who want to check it out.
ASR Newsletter number 78 is at the press from Anarcho-Syndicalist Review. Quote, fellow workers, sick, ASR number 78 has just gone on the press and will mail out to subscribers next week. This issue explores labor and the climate crisis, the McDonaldization of labor, Kurdish resistance, and many other issues. The table of contents is online, unquote. These kinds of groups remind me why CrimeThink calls itself the X-Workers Collective. But perhaps we can get off that binary entirely? Just a thought.
Audio and video. Final Straw, Project Fang on Combating Isolation. An hour and 2 minutes. Quote, first, Cypress spoke with Jenny from Project Fang, a project that financially supports visits to Earth and animal liberation prisoners. Since 2016, Project Fang has worked to combat the isolation these prisoners feel by providing a fund for financial assistance for visits. The prisoners and their loved ones can apply to the fund to help pay for prison visits, which is one of the most important ways of supporting prisoners. Project Fang is currently in the middle of a fundraising push as they look to double their annual budget to continue their work. Much has been said about the vital importance that visits from friends, family, and loved ones can have for folks forced to undergo incarceration at the hands of the state. Jenny goes into detail about the work she and the project do to help turn isolation around and about how this work fits into a broader whole of creating sustainable communities of rebellion. Our second segment is a talk by Tyler on the technopolitics of crypto-anarchy. This talk was recorded at the 2019 North American Anarchist Studies Network Conference in Atlanta, Georgia. Unquote.
Bad News, episode number 28, an hour and 2 minutes. Info on the network arrests in Russia, specifically Ilya Romanov. Info about Chile, including excerpts of a talk with a member of an anarcho-communist group in Santiago. Evictions of squats and resistance in Greece. London's Extinction Rebellion, whoopee, and Rojava. Also, another audio collage, this time from a feminist march in Chile. Art.
Primal Anarchy Podcast, an hour and 39 minutes. A recording of two people enjoying their relationship, giggling about emotional upheaval, on the ghost of a marriage of many years, another example of how the people who tell the stories are the ones who write history, however minor that history may be, and also an example of class and male privilege in case we need another one. Anyway, Kevin Tucker rambles on with his new partner, I mean co-host, wowing and writing along like a good chorus. Another voice will make these consistently hour-plus podcasts more listenable, but that is not saying much, unfortunately. Also, he's against fascism, and fascism is everywhere. Everywhere! Also, Kickstarter let him down, so don't blame him. Also, emotional chaos. Really.
Extremism in Belarus, from Pramen, 13 minutes. This is a badly named video of a young man talking about the growing use of the word extremism to mean bad. The video touches multiple issues, media and state jargon as a way to stifle and invisibilize dissent, how terms come to mean bad without any actual content, the simplification of language that Umberto Eco talks about as part of fascism, etc. The specifics are about Belarus, but the lessons are broader. It's a decent Media for Radicals 101, boring visually, but quite brave.
Topic of the week, family. We're entering a time of year when many of us will be having a higher than usual amount of contact with our families, desired or undesired. The holidays present us with more contact than usual with quote unquote normal people, whose presences in our lives preceded our concept of the political. My sense of many anarchists is that their initial sense of rebelliousness came from a fuck you mom and dad that carried over into adulthood. And that their rebellion was born in part from a resistance to parents who were, slash are, disapproving, disappointing, domineering, abusive, etc. There's no shortage of radical critiques of the bourgeois family as stifling, disciplinary, and depressing. Yet the family may be felt as a positive influence as well. For myself, I'd say the trust I felt and the freedom I was given in action and expression as a young person helped inculcate an aversion to authority. And while the oppressive bourgeois family may persist, some of us may be the products of alternative parenting styles, conscientious liberal households in which science is real and Black Lives Matter, or even black diaper babies. For this topic, I want to focus on the people who are responsible for raising you, as well as the people who were being raised around you during your childhood and teenage years. That is to say, parents and siblings are people you consider to be in those roles. How much has your family influenced your politics? Did your relationships with them change after you became an anarchist? Hello, Aragorn.
Ariel, long time no see.
Long time, yeah. Nice to be here.
I actually think that this is a well-written and considered topic of the week.
Really?
I know. I don't say that very often.
I'm surprised by that.
Well, I mean,
both considering it's a topic of the week and the particular topic that it is.
Yeah, I mean, of course, you know, I guess on some level this is a trite thing, but the wording here is very considered. Anyways, I like that.
Yeah, I agree.
I have complimented the author. Now we move on. Well, there's a reason why I'm a post-left anarchist, and that is absolutely because of my family. I oftentimes criticize my father for his particular mediocrities, but, you know, I come from a union family, and to the extent to which there is a left, my family was part of it. Yeah, I also appreciate the fact that my parents, like many parents at the time, more or less left me the fuck alone. I don't have big long stories of being traumatized and terrorized by my family. I mean, there was a little bit of trauma, a little bit of terror.
Mm-hmm.
My mother was really fucked up from a young age, and so that's true, but she definitely wasn't sort of on some level part of the family system. Like, she was just her own fuck up. Did your relationships with them change after you became an anarchist? Not at all. I think that on some level they're happy that to the extent to which they consider themselves hippies or like part of whatever the youth movement of the 60s were, they very much see me as that I took that on more, maybe more seriously than they did. I've never sort of felt them be judgmental of my anarchism, but perhaps judgmental of my general life choices, which of course are disapprovable.
Just kind of as a whole, just all.
Well, I mean, you know, at the very least, like,
they're confusing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. You leave the normies in your life, in your wake, confused.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty consciously, of course.
So. Sure. But, yeah.
Maybe even gleefully.
So it's the holidays. Do you have more contact or interaction with them than you do in the rest of the year?
I don't. I have a particular family member who's sort of in need a little bit right now, who's been reaching out. But by and large, they have not been, they haven't been on arm and knee begging me for me to come around or anything. I recently actually just got some Facebook, like, you should friend these people things of yeah, family, uh-huh. family members. Oh, I just, family. I don't really know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Huh. I don't do family on Facebook.
Yeah.
Period.
No, I get that.
Not even the ones I actually like.
Yeah.
Because you open the door to the ones you like and it opens the door to all the rest of them.
Yeah.
And so they just know. Don't ask because no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, we're intending for the conversation for Anarchy Bang this week to be on this topic.
Uh-huh.
And it's funny, as we're talking right now, I'm starting to be like, I don't have much to say. You know, because I'm now older than my parents have ever were when I was anywhere around them.
Right.
Like, when they were my age right now, I was like 30. They were absolutely not in my life.
Yeah.
So there's a way in which, like, I really look forward to what people have to say about this, but I don't have much to add.
Yeah. I mean, my experience isn't quite that. My mother was 17. My father was 18.
Yeah, mine were 18 and 19 right. proper.
So
yeah.
they were very young. Mm-hmm. My mother is, my father was mostly absent past age 4.
Yep, same with me.
And so my mother is absolutely the primary influence in my life.
Right.
And she was a hardcore, no holds barred second wave feminist. You know, the lessons I were taught were question everything. Everything's going to be harder for you. No one's going to help you. You're going to be alone because not only are you a woman, you're biracial. And so you're already crippled and handicapped from the start. And so it's all, I mean, they weren't her words, but essentially it's all going to be shit and it's all on you to make it not shit, basically.
I mean, but also you're always going to have your family.
Yes, and I'm absolutely one of those people.
Yeah.
I have a ton of family. My mother has one brother. There are many other children in my generation. My grandfather, her father has 10 brothers and sisters.
Yeah. And her they more mother, or less are who raised
her. Her mother has 7 brothers and sisters. Mm-hmm. On the other side of the family, there's like, in my father's generation, there's like 17 of them.
Yeah.
And they all have gangs of kids. So they're absolutely everywhere. But I don't like most of them. And I don't talk to most of them. But I do have a small circle of family that are people that I genuinely like and that I will spend time with and talk to. And that constitutes like, I don't know, 6 people or something like that. I guess 8 if you include my grandparents, my mother's parents. But there's distance, and there's distance on purpose. And so typically in my life, I don't see these people regularly. Like, I actually just saw one of my father's sisters, who I like very much, But I hadn't seen her in 3 years. And we arranged to be able to spend time together. And so it was great. I got to spend a week with her. I realized that now she's someone that I kind of don't like that much. But that was okay because it was a distracted week. There was a lot going on. Okay. So anyway, back to the question. Not liking the feminist politics of second wave feminism is definitely part of what set me searching, which is part of how I found anarchy. Mm-hmm. Everyone in my life who I could give a damn about has always been incredibly supportive about it. And the normies that I come in contact with aren't actually people that I'm, where it's a thing, aren't people that I'm related to. They're just people in the Midwest who are like family friends and don't understand and want to ask questions. And I decide based on the person in the moment, how much I'm going to give them, how much I'm going to talk about.
Sure.
But you know, I'm a 45-year-old woman. I've never been married. I never birthed any children. And like that in itself.
Yeah.
It was a thing. It was a big deal growing up.
Yeah, for sure.
And honestly, one of the best things about crossing 35 was people stopped asking me.
Mm-hmm.
Because up until that moment, you know, every time you ran into someone that you hadn't seen in longer than like 3 months, it was, you know, so are you married yet? Are you planning on children? And, you know, the fact that the answer never changed and the fact that the answer was always, no, I don't want kids. I'm fine. Life is great. It's like they don't believe you.
Yep.
So I always found that really fucking obnoxious. My anarchy was definitely not a fuck you mom and dad thing. The distance leaving Ohio and coming, as my friend put it, until I hit water, that was absolutely a fuck you family thing. I do not want this life, and I want as much distance in between this life and the life that I'm going to build as possible. But the distance was enough. I didn't actually have to. I mean, I kind of did. Like, every time I had a break at school, I would go home for the holidays. And then realized, like, traveling at Thanksgiving is the shittiest thing ever.
Yes, of course.
And basically 3 or 4 years in, I at the Thanksgiving dinner table, I looked around and went, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not coming anymore.
Yeah.
It's way too inconvenient. It costs too much money. It's not fun. It's just a pain in the ass. And none of this is worth it. So I live in a place people want to come to. Come visit me.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't move to Kansas. I moved to San Francisco. Bring your asses to San Francisco. I'm done doing this. Yeah. But aside from that, yeah, I mean, it's definitely not quite the same story. Not fingers in the middle air, you know, the door slamming behind me.
I mean, it's funny, you know, it's like, of course, I could spend 5 minutes talking about the fact that I was lucky enough at a certain point in my life to be able to do family on cruise ships, which is a very strange thing to talk about in the context of anarchism. But it was only a couple years, and in fact, I didn't become a cruise ship myself.
Yeah, but age-wise, they were important years.
Sure,
actually.
Sure, yeah, they were around 20.
And so you both got the... especially the family member involved wanted to force a lot of structure and control, but it's a big fucking cruise ship and she can't find you all the time. So, you both got to be exposed to, and I actually think that's probably the most significant thing for you was you had this family member who really wanted to be in your life and in your face and, you know, really wanted to care. Quote unquote, like that, which was not what you were used to.
Yeah.
And so then you both got to experience and then use the cruise ship to immediately escape from it, which is actually kind of awesome.
I mean, you know, the real thing I got was, you know, I got to seem like a sophisticated traveler person.
True. Yeah.
And,
China and white napkins.
Right, at the dinner table.
All of the proper...
The baked Alaska
and eating the fancy foods and and then the fantastic exotic off ship excursions and it's nice to have a relative who has a good gig like that.
I strongly recommend it.
Marry into the cruise ship industry. Yes. You were born into it, fortunately, but marry into the cruise ship industry. This is a good thing.
Family.
I don't, I mean, I, you know, I, one of my best friends, cut ties with his father, who was a perfectly nice, perfectly supportive, totally good parent. But, you know, his father embodied all of the violence inherent in the bourgeoisie in a suburb in middle America. And he decided he didn't want any of that fucking shit in his life. And so he just said, no, I'm done. Which is definitely one of the most intense versions of that I've ever seen. There wasn't an issue. There wasn't a fight. There wasn't a catalyst. He just kind of looked at the long view of, you know, his relationship with him over the last X many years and was like, I don't like you. I don't want this. And that's a different level and also impressive and also, you know, I think appropriate. And I think more people should probably cut ties with their families when they don't.
That's true.
And I often stand back and look at my life and think I've still kept too many in and need to cut some more. Yeah. I feel like we talked more about parents
and family
and in the past than we do now.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, do you think, you think that's real?
At some point you get over it.
No, I mean, as a political tendency.
I know, but at some point you get over it.
Is it because there are fewer young people coming in, maybe? And they're not talking about it?
All that's true. I mean, there is definitely a couple generation shifts that we're now on the other side of. And it does seem a lot more frequently for people who are 10 to 15 years younger than us to actually get along with their parents.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I've gotten over it. I mean, that's the terrible thing about getting older is that at some point you stop caring about the mundane things. And okay, thank you very much for doing this.
Thanks. To death do us part, we will belong to each other. To death do us part, we will not look for just like he made us, we'll be as one, till death do us part.
This week's podcast was sound edited by Lynn O'Mabel. The What's New was written by Jackie and read by Chisel and a Friend.
Hi!
No editorial this week. We thank Aragorn and a Friend for their help with the topic of the week. Contact us at podcast@anarchistnews.org. To learn more, anarchist and anti-political books, pamphlets, and other material are available at littleblackheart.com for news by and or about anarchists and up-to-the-minute commentary. See you at anarchistnews.org and or the Anarchist News IRC chat room linked on A-News. Talk to you next week. We'll be as one, till death do us part. We are no longer two. Yeah.